Okay, according to my watch, I think we're at 12:02. And so with that, I'd like to call the August meeting of the CERC Board of Directors to order. I just want to tell you that I'm in a very, very dangerous situation here. Uh-oh. I come into the CERC office and I'm sitting in front of Ingrid's jelly bean dispenser here. And I've already taken more advantage of it than what I probably should. But by the time this meeting is over, you know, I should probably have had my fix of jelly beans for a while. Jennifer, do we know that there have been any requests for public comments?
No, George, I haven't received any.
Okay. Make a note, no requests for public comments. The minutes of the last meeting have been sent to you. I hope that you've had a chance to review them. If there are any corrections, please note them. Otherwise, I will take a motion, accept a motion to accept the minutes of June 25.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Second. Thank you. All in favor, let me know by saying aye.
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 Any abstentions? None. Thank you very much. The motion carried.
Charlene, hi.
Sorry.
Is that Charlene?
I saw you trying to talk, Charlene. I'm like, wait.
Oh. No, just abstaining because I wasn't at the last meeting.
Great.
Well, good to have you here today. Thank you.
George, I was also thinking we should do attendance roll call, just everyone to say who's in the meeting.
Okay, that might be a good idea for the purpose, because we are being recorded. If we can, Agnes, if we can start with you and just go down and make sure that for the record, we have an indication or note of everybody who is in fact participating. So if you just say your name, present, that'll be fine. Thank you.
Agnes Quiñones, present.
Liz?
Liz Brown, present.
Charlene Russell-Tucker, present.
Tom Swan, present.
Tom? Aaron, you will. Aaron
Benham, present.
Thank you. Other board members, may we have the staff who are participating, or?
Ingrid Kennedy, present. Executive Director.
Christy Jacko, Program Services Manager, present.
Glenn Hale, CFO, present.
Great.
Crystal Hewitt, HR Manager, present.
Great.
All right. Michelle Weaver, General Counsel, present.
Great, Michelle, thanks.
Stephen Proppett, Director for Special Ed Programs, present.
Sarah Jones, Foundation Consultant, present.
Great. All right.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you very much for acknowledging yourself. It's been a long time, I think, since we've been able to have our new or our full complement of the representatives from the state board on our board. And Aaron, you don't know how much we appreciate your being here. And with that, I'm going to ask Aaron, who does sit on the State Board of Education, to introduce herself so that for those of us who don't monitor what they do every month, we'll get a sense of what contribution she can make to our own board through that which she chooses to share with us. So Aaron, I'll give you as much time as you need.
Well, I promise I won't take that much. Hello, everyone. It's nice to meet everybody, and it's certainly nice to be here. As George said, I am a member of the State Board of Education. I'm starting my sixth year. I was appointed first by Governor Malloy and again by Governor Lamont. I am a retired educator. I was in Meriden for 39 years. my last 12, I served also as the president of the Meriden Federation of Teachers and vice president for the AFT Connecticut. Some of my background as an educator and a union leader, worked very closely with AFT National for many different initiatives in our district in Meriden. Our biggest one was extended day school. We opened up 3 extended day schools in Meriden over the years with the help of the AFT. We also did a lot of work with evaluation through AFT, which our present commissioner as participated as a Meriden principal and was trained by the AFT. So we did a lot of work with that as well as in Meriden. I also, within my last 5 years, we started work with the Dalio Foundation with the Connecticut RISE Network. I'm not sure if all of you are familiar, but we were, Meriden is one of the first cohorts in the Connecticut RISE Network, along with East Hartford and New Haven. And RISE has since added a second cohort of another 5 districts in the state. I also serve on the Connecticut RISE Network Board of Directors. And I also serve on the Fund for Teachers Advisory Board for the state of Connecticut. Both are funded by the Dalio Foundation. I am, presently working on a whole child study group for NASB. I was selected for that a month ago, so that's pretty exciting. And I've actually used some information of CERC to pass along in our discussions that we had. We've had 2 meetings so far, and we'll have 4 more before the year is out. And it's just a nationwide study group looking at the whole child, which Charlene, I'm sure, has kept you very current on the great work of the Connecticut State Department of Education in that area. So Connecticut has a lot to offer as that. I also serve on one other board that is very special to me, and that is the Sisters Project. And that is a board that I share with my sisters, both biologically and through friendship. And we raise funds in our Wallingford, Meriden, North Haven community for cancer patients. So that is something I'm very proud of and have served on for about 10 years. And I think that sums it up. I'm happy to continue education role with CERC. As an educator, I certainly am well aware of CERC, participated in many webinars and training and conferences. And so I certainly know that background, and I'll soon become to know this background of the leadership of CERC. So I feel very fortunate to be chosen. Thank you.
Well, I want to say thank you. And before I ask Michelle to administer the oath, I just wanted to say that here at CERC, we so much want to fulfill our obligation. In fact, we feel our reason for being is to support the State Board of Education in the agenda that it adopts so that it can be as effective as a policy board can be in terms of disseminating any practices that emanate from that policy that has an impact on our students and their ability to learn. In addition to which, those areas for which we know there's a high degree of desire on the board, but for which there might not be a leading policy, we take the responsibility to begin to be an incubator for some of that potential work, and the extent to which we can then bring that to the department for them to understand the value of it and for policy consideration. That's what we want to do. That's the relationship that we have assumed, and we feel very comfortable with it. And having you as a state board member on the board to bring back to the board directly those things that are happening at CERC, and to bring to CERC those concerns of the board, those desires of the board that affect CERC, is very, very valuable to us. So thank you very much for being here. And I can't wait to talk to Alan to let him know that how ecstatic I am that that's the case. So thank you very much. And with that, I'll ask Michelle if she can administer the oath.
Thank you. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi, Michelle again.
Hi. So I have confirmed your identity previously. So I am sure that you are who you are. If you would just state for the record your present physical location.
41 South Main Street, Wallingford, Connecticut.
Perfect. Well, you're in Connecticut. So I'm going to read a statement to you and then ask you to just respond with your affirmation. And then it will be, probably has been sent to you, and just ask that you would electronically sign it and return it to me before the end of today.
Yes, I did receive it and I sent it back.
Perfect. So you solemnly swear or solemnly and sincerely affirm, as the case may be, that you will faithfully discharge according to law your duties as a member, as a board member of the State Education Resource Center, CERC, to the best of your abilities, so help you God, or upon penalty of perjury.
I will.
Thank you.
Thank you. We haven't had to get anybody's firstborns yet. Thank you very much, Michelle, for that. And thank you as well, Aaron, for that commitment. With that, I would like to entertain a motion that the board go into executive sessions to consider a personnel matter.
So moved.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Thank you very much. We will proceed there now.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull you all into a breakout room, okay? Give me 1 second. Does Michelle Weaver need to be present?
She can. I think that might be a good idea.
Yeah, okay, great.
Thank you. And we're able to get those figures.
Good.
All right. I always forget this. Do we have to have some sort of motion to resume the regular meeting now? I
think yes, we do. Yep.
Great. May I have a motion that we resume our regular meeting?
So moved.
That we come out of executive session and that we resume our regular meeting. Did I get a motion from Agnes?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, great. May I have a second? Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Great. With that, Liz, may I have the a motion representing the action, the intended action of the board?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that the CERC board authorize Ingrid Canada, Executive Director, to participate in a doctoral program up to 9 credits per semester for 6 semesters. The reimbursement cost is not to exceed UConn's cost per graduate credit.
Thank you. Having heard the motion, may I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor of the motion, let it be known by saying aye.
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 May I have any abstentions?
I abstain.
Let it be known that Aaron abstains. Do I have any who oppose the motion? Hearing no oppositions, thank you very much. The motion carries. Ingrid, congratulations for you. I want you to know on behalf of the board, we so much appreciate what you have done. We recognize that this investment in you will enable us to exploit you even more thoroughly. So thank you. Thank you very much for your service. And you have been great. So thank you. I just wanted to acknowledge that Liz has an appointment that will take her away. And I think that might be what we are experiencing on the board on our screen now is that she's having to move forward. With that, though, I think we're ready to go into the committee reports. Program committee.
So good morning, good afternoon, everyone. How are you?
Great.
So last week.
Steve, can you introduce yourself? Oh. We do have a new board person who might not know.
Oh, sorry about that, Aaron. I'm Steve Prophet. I'm the Director for Special Education Programming and Instructional Design. So I primarily oversee all the programming efforts and oversee the consultants carrying out programming work on behalf of the Bureau of Special Education, State Department of Education, district contracts, and grants. So that's pretty much my role. So we had our program meeting last week, and we pretty much just gave a quick overview. George and was on, and Dr. Yancey. And so what we did is we just gave an update that, number one, our 2021 signed budget from the State Department of Ed came through a number of weeks ago. So that was great for us to carry out, you know, our responsibilities as CERC for on behalf of what we have to do. So I always thank Charlene and Brian and all their efforts to help us move that process forward in order for us to get that signed budget for us to carry out the work. We are well into the process of planning and delivering on our virtual IDEA programming activities right now through December. We had our meeting with Brian Klimkiewicz and Christy Giacco, and our team met yesterday to really map out the schedule of all of those activities across the different special education initiatives to support the Bureau's work on behalf of educators and families. So we're in the process of doing all that now and getting ready to market those. The decision was to allow schools to get into session, get themselves acclimated into their in-person and hybrid model arrangements. So our professional development sessions will begin in October. This way, September allows for schools to get organized. We are in the process of doing a lot of work for the Commissioner's Network and the School Improvement Grant. So Eben McKnight, one of our consultants, is leading that work, which is now the second series. We finished out a series in June this past year. We are now rolling out a second series for the turnaround for the Commissioner's Network schools and some of those schools that have unused school improvement grants that were carried over but need to be spent. So we're in the process of doing that work now under Evan McKnight's leadership. We also are we just finished a two-day symposium led by Amanda Pickett and her team, which was a two-day symposium on substance abuse. They had some great keynote speakers and breakout sessions, so there was really active and a nice level of participation, given that it was conducted in a virtual space. We are still well into the process of receiving district contracts now to help carry out work for our school districts. Many requests around racial equity. So we are in the process of really developing some really strong training modules virtually for our districts who are reaching out to us to help support their efforts in carrying out racial equity work. So those are just some of the quick highlights for the current school year as we start. So as we follow a school year, we've launched just as quickly as our school districts now to really get prepared for a very successful 2021 school year.
Thank you very much. Just to embellish a bit of what our conversation in the committee was. One, a part of what we know is the environment that is requiring us to really master the protocols and the technologies that are associated with the virtual environment. And I want to say as much as I think it's a part of what is listed in our agenda for my comment. I am encouraging Ingrid to do everything that is necessary to make sure that our staff has the hardware, the software, and the training that's necessary to be a fluid deliverer of technology-based professional instruction. I think that we have a higher standard to arrive and to achieve, and we need to know that this is probably going to be a big transition for us as we move forward. Even after COVID, this will probably be a part of what we're going to be doing more of in the future. The other thing, though, that I am concerned about, I noticed just this morning that some of the schools, particularly in Danbury, that had been scheduled to open are now not going to be opening at the schedule that they can. How can we create the capacity to have to record our professional development exercises so that teachers can have access to them at a schedule that might be more convenient to them if for some reason their system isn't up and going and everybody can have access at the same time? I am so concerned that schools and teachers particularly are so preoccupied with just getting there and the day-to-day things that they have to do that we're going to have to be flexible, that we have to think about formats that allow them to access the information and training that they need in a much more flexible way. So as we are thinking about this, how can we design our programs, our professional development, in a way that anticipate people having to access it at a time other than when we are there delivering it as a scheduled event? So those are just things, I think, in terms of us being sensitive to the changed environment and wanting to reach as many professionals as we can. Those are two areas that I hope we can be attentive to. Other concerns or comments?
Just one more comment. Under Ingrid's leadership, she supported CERC to purchase a brand new learning management system called Canvas, which is really going to support much of our online trainings and virtual sessions, along with our Zoom platform that we use as our primary vehicle. So our plan is September just to really build our own skill sets in Canvas with our subscription to Canvas. We also get free technical assistance and training. So they will be, so Greg Glidden, our web specialist, is working with Canvas to schedule those sessions during September while we're a little bit slow in our PD sessions because of the waiting till October to really start. So that's what our plan is.
Okay, great. And finally, in the future, I've asked that Michelle Griffin also be a part of the program committee's presentation so that we can grow to think of this work as a part of the program, because not only now, but in the future, as we think about the professional development that might go with these new curriculums, that we can think about it as a part of our program offering as well. So
it's a question, and I don't know what the answer is, and I probably need to take back internally, but you mentioned the different options that are offering and going hybrid, versus not. And I know I'm speaking for Erin as well. I know we get so concerned about our students with disabilities.
Yeah.
And what may be happening even in this space. And I wonder, have you had any conversation about CERC's support for districts with our students, whatever decisions that they're making? Is there something that's more enhanced support directly to districts that are now having students who may have either, one, opted into remote learning, even though they're students with disabilities with IEPs that have to be implemented, or are going hybrid, you know, for students where IEPs need to be implemented? And I'm thinking out loud.
Yeah.
Just came to me as I'm listening to this, is there a role for CERC to help support districts in this space?
Stephen, what has Brian's thought have been about this? I think everybody's concerned. I think among the principal concerns of the general public has been youngsters with disabilities, both in terms of access to virtual learning, but the quality of, but the compatibility of virtual learning to their IEPs and its compatibility. Have we gotten any particular guidance from Brian about a role that he wants CERC to play in this relative to that concern?
Well, Brian just met with our consultant team yesterday to review the full sixth addendum to all the districts around special education guidance. And one specific area was under the IEP, there's different, there's forms districts have to submit on how they're going to be delivering special education services for students, either in person, hybrid, or fully remote. So that's a form that was developed. And so we will be continuing to support his efforts in helping support districts around those types of needs that they have around meeting the specific special ed needs for their students with disabilities. He's also working closely with CERC, the Bureau, and CPAC. So for 2 months to kind of do a, he started at, I guess Miguel Cardona started at the State Department of Ed. It was like after hours, I think, for superintendents. He's doing the same thing for, with CPAC, CERC, and the Bureau, to have sessions where districts can zoom in and request and take a look at some TA opportunities to support their needs around educating kids with disabilities, either procedural or instructional. So that's, he's developing that process and protocol right now. He shared that with our consultant team yesterday.
I'm Charlene, just to comment on your, as I've been thinking about this, when we think about kids with disabilities, particularly youngsters with learning disabilities and some who have disabilities associated with mobility, it becomes even more important that those families are a part of that delivery service. Mm-hmm. You know, one, that the families understand what the child's needs are, and that they have the facility to support whatever the IEP requires. And I just get concerned, and I hope that we can, as we are helping to be a thought partner with Brian, thinking about those two components, you know. And sometimes I think about, I think I shared with Ingrid the other day or whatever, sometimes we might have to think about how do we develop 5-minute segments that help explain something, and then another 5 minutes that helps demonstrate it, so that families who are not therapists, who are not educators, but who are now a part of this IEP program, can have a short digest that helps them understand what the nature of the situation is and how they can participate in lieu of the therapist, but at the direction of the therapist in delivering some of what the child might otherwise have to get at home. So anyway, thank you. I appreciate it. But one of the good things that happened here is that we bring all these thoughts into you for you to take back to Brian and hopefully say, Brian, you know, my board was concerned about this. And, you know, it might give him support also in being courageous and an advocate for what we do. So thank you very much.
George, I'd like to add something to the conversation. It's the layer of the English language learner student that also has needs in the area of special education. So I think that as you have conversations with Brian and his bureau, that you keep that in mind, because the numbers of ELL students that also have issues with learning disability and other areas, they get forgotten. And I think that one of the key elements, because I was part of the team out of the department that read the plans that the districts put together, those areas, the support to be provided to the English language learner students that all are also are challenged with disabilities, and the need of districts to provide services to cater to the needs was very weak in the plans that I read. I could tell you that maybe 4 out of the 28 or 30 that I read were very thorough and comprehensive and detailed in their approach. So I think that outside of what the department is doing, I think that maybe a conversation to be had for us as an organization is to what are the kinds of things that we could do also to help districts independently of the work and the support that the department is providing. Because I think that many districts don't know what to do. They're very generic in their approach. And I think that we can become a champion of strategies that can be provided to support not only the districts, but also the parents that are desperate for some of these services and supports.
So I'm optimistic that with Gladys Labus being hired as one of the up at the State Department of Ed to support English learners and equity, that she'll become a real partner with CERC as well to help support those efforts. Because I know, you know, the English learners with also the intersection of disability with, you know, English learners is a tremendous challenge and a strategy that has to be addressed. So that's something. And then just Aaron, anytime you want to meet with me, interview, so I can give you more of a comprehensive overview of CERC programming, please reach out to me and I'll set up a Zoom meeting with you and I can go over all different other initiatives that, you know, that you may want to know about around programming.
Thank you for that, Stephen. And thank you, ladies. That's what I was going to bring up after she said was, certainly our L population. And I agree with you, Stephen, that certainly with Gladys Labus now being up there, that maybe we can have some kind of partnership, because I worry about both those populations a great deal and the support needed for our L families too, that is easy to understand and easy to follow, and that they truly can become support systems for their children, I think is most important. So thank you for both for bringing that up. And Stephen, I'll probably take you up on that.
No problem.
Once things calm down a little
bit. Yeah.
Yeah, so certainly not to prolong the conversation, but what I heard Agnes say, which is really important, there are the things that Brian or the department may be putting in that space, but please be innovative in your thinking as well to bring forward to us things that we might not even have thought about as you are traversing that space as well. You know, so I want it to be that kind of back and forth exchange. So it's, yes, we have some ideas and we have some thoughts, and I'm making notes. I'm texting Brian as we're here on the call. However, as you're thinking, you know, just for, I was going to say this for my thank you, but I'll say it now. So CERC was able to stand up for us. I wanted to make sure that this is a health pandemic, that we're reaching families directly. And so we thought, you know, I want to do a virtual house call. I want families to be able to talk to medical professionals, not the bureaucrats in our offices. And so we put it out there, and in one day, and CERC, we wanted CERC to use the Zoom platform. in one day we exceeded 1,000 folks who signed up and served so nicely, was able to pivot and upgraded the licensing so that we can exceed the number. But the good news is we now have a platform that can accommodate 5,000. And the feedback was actually so positive for families having direct access to medical professionals who were so thoughtful and caring that they could talk with directly. So think about it, and that, you know, so going back to Agnes's thought about what you can also innovate and share with us, even if we have to seed it or fund it, let's figure it out, but bring some of those things to us as well as we think about this space. We have, you know, we have one district with over 3,000 IEPs to be implemented that may be doing all this in a remote space. And so what does that look like? And is there an opportunity for CERC to be able to help to provide some enhanced supports directly to districts like that? So
just one comment. Out of that house call, Charlene, that you and Stephanie coordinated, that Zoom meeting, Gladys followed up with one of our consultants to possibly replicate that fully in Spanish for our families who just to do the whole.
Thank you for that. I mentioned it because one of the, it's a doctor from CCMC, Dr. Ketter, who also was wanting to do this. I think he's fluent in Spanish again and said, I want to do this with families. So mm-hmm. thank you for continuing to have that conversation.
Just before we leave this, I wanted to just make the general comment that often I'm the reports of cognitive loss as a result of not having direct access to instruction or what we believe is the best. And I've been concerned about the extent to which that might affect Charlene identification numbers, whereby districts tend to, when students don't have the access to high quality instruction, those youngsters typically will see an increase in the special ed counts for those school districts. And I just think that we just need to be aware of them. One is because there will be a great number of youngsters who, because of the separation, will have lost a lot. And if we don't expect them to be represented in special ed numbers, then what are we doing to help bridge that learning void? So to the extent that we can be a part of that conversation, at least be aware of the conversation, and knowing that those youngsters at the local level and maybe certainly at the support level to districts, that might be another area where we need to triage with the districts, with the state, to think about how do we maximize the assets that we can develop on behalf of youngsters who might be subject to distance learning that don't have the capacity to produce what in-person learning might. Okay, thank you very much. We are going to move on to the Finance Committee. Glenn?
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Glenn Hale, Chief Financial Officer. The Finance Committee met last week, and we reviewed the draft projected June 30th financial statements for the agency, and we covered a couple other items also. So I'll quickly go over a high level review of the, starting with the balance sheet. Total assets for the agency were just over $3.9 million. The majority of that is currently in cash, 3.1, and 500,000 in accounts receivable. The cash situation, as everybody's been on the previous meeting, dramatically changed. We were several months in arrears waiting for funding from CSDE Fiscal Office, and we caught up through June. And then also we received our funding to carry us through the summer as well. So that's why we're so cash rich at the moment, because CSDE Fiscal shuts down for the summer. So they advance funded us for July and August So we're in a good cash position currently. As far as liabilities go, no extraordinary items. The normal vendor payables are just shy of $200,000, and then accrued payroll and benefit items of just over $240,000. There is currently a balance of $1.9 million, which is a portion of that unearned cash above, which will get recognized and rolled into revenue in the new fiscal year through July and August and going forward. So total assets and total liabilities, net assets, 3.972. Anybody have any questions regarding the balance sheet?
I just want to make a comment, and that is that I think that we've never had a balance sheet that was as up to date in the summer before. So it's kind of nice knowing that, hey, your budget reflects what you intend to do, and that's a good feeling not to have to wait for it. So thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I will add to that, George, that we haven't had this type of financial statements for a long time. So I'm continuing to be very grateful to Glenn and his team for their due diligence in keeping up and doing and providing current information about our financial health.
Thank you. Okay, no other questions on the balance sheet. Quickly, we'll touch upon the statement of revenue and expense. Once again, this is a projection. We still have some final year-end adjustments to make, as well as going through our audit, where it sometimes will result in some additional adjustments. But based on our current projection, total revenue of $5.7 million, the bulk of that coming from, you know, the federal funding through the IDEA money, and then the other various components coming from state grants and then in-district contracts as well that provide a significant portion of funding. There are a couple of open items regarding some carryover funds for activities that were unable to be fulfilled in the past fiscal year due to the shutdown for the virus restrictions. So there may be some adjustments to revenue going forward, but that's where we currently stand without any of the final adjustments. Expense side, our operating expenses, $4.674 million. And the bulk of that, of course, is salary and benefits, $3.1 million in salary, $700,000 in benefits. The remaining items are normal operational costs, such as property, occupancy, utilities, and the normal IT and technology related costs. As you mentioned earlier, we did do some additional investment this past fiscal year, especially in the second half when we got into the shutdown, starting to purchase some additional software or hardware or other, you know, peripheral systems to support some of our activities. So in addition to this, program expenses for the year, just shy of $1 million, $969,000 in program expenses. So projected total expenses, just over $5.6 million. At the moment, we are projecting a surplus of $75,000, anticipating that's probably going to go down a little bit based on some final adjustments due to some open items, but we're confident we will end up with a little bit of a surplus for the year. Any questions or comments on the revenue and expense?
I think we can probably, Ingrid can probably help you here, or you can. Ingrid, I'm interested in the increased requests from districts for service, for CERC services, particularly around the equity work.
Thank you, George. Thank you, board members. This is Ingrid Kennedy. Let me start by saying, first of all, thank you so much for what you have done on behalf of the agency. My family and I just thank you. I'm excited about this new venture. So thank you to all of you. George, just to add to your question, and I'm going to touch upon a little bit more later on, but given the incidents they have going on around the nation, I will say the CERC, 18 years ago, we began to position the agency in a way in which have prepared us for today. And the way that I wanted to say, put this in perspective for all of you, we are no longer just local providing the service. We have gone nationally. We are doing trainings in Nevada. We are doing trainings in Washington State. We are receiving contracts from California. And I will provide you that in a minute. But to George's point, I just want to give you an insight of this is happening almost on a daily basis. the emails that we receive for our services, and others are actually sending people to us, programs to us to say, you are the ones that know how to do this and are able to provide the level of support. Because as you all know, CERC does not, we don't do diversity training. We do deep racial equity, social justice training. And that's what is now has put us at the forefront of this effort. So we're very excited, a lot of work, and that goes back to the conversation that you will hear today from our HR regarding some positions, because the demand has increased greatly. Our staff, our team, myself personally, we find ourselves doing trainings back and back, back to back to back. So which is excited. And we're working with communities now, not just school districts, not just organizations. We actually have the Sunnyton Public Schools. They have a social coalition as the whole community. We're engaging with the Wethersfield community. The whole community now is involved in this effort. And we have a couple of other requests that have come our way. So I just wanted to briefly reiterate that. And that is going to be reflected when Glenn presents next time on the budget for this year. You will see the increase of in-district contracts.
Thank you. The purpose of asking you to comment was to give confidence to the board in terms of our tracking and our ability of for us to in terms of those things that we offer, that school districts will use them or feel the need for them. And what we're seeing is an increase every year in more and more school districts inviting us to provide services to them other than the special education services. So as well as other aspects of the department asking us to support them in ways other than special ed. So I think we can, our confidence in that sense of our mixed budget is buoyed. So thank you, and thank you, Glenn, as well.
Thank you, George.
Thank you. Okay. If there are no other questions or comments on the revenue expense, just one other item quickly. With the Finance Committee, I put in place last year that annually, as a best practice, we'll review any pending accounts receivables that are due to the agency. And, you know, best practice is really to write off items that you deem uncollectible. So last year, for the first time, we did a write-off of $4,000 or $5,000 of uncollectible. This year, I've done the same thing. Fiscal team went through, reviewed everything, and there's a handful of transactions that have been pending over 90 days, and honestly, over a year, they've been pending. So it's approximately $6,000 that reviewed in detail with the Finance Committee, and as a best practice, I'd like to get this board's approval to write these items off, as they are most definitely uncollectible, as they've been outstanding over a year. We've pursued every avenue, from phone calls, emails, letters, invoices, and, you know, just a handful of these items are just not going to be collected. As you just note on the balance sheet, there's over $500,000 in receivables. So on a percentage basis, this is a very minute percentage of total receivables. So that's the position that I'm presenting. If there's any questions or comments.
So moved.
Second, but may I have a question?
Absolutely.
The entity with the $4,700, was that person representing many people that arrived at that amount? Was that person not meeting their obligation over many events over a long time? That's a lot of money that a single entity representing, if that's one person, would be liable for.
George, if I can jump in here, and I know the rest of the team will do the same thing, I can represent that person is actually, it is a instructional material. It was one of our testing from the library. That is the cause of a testing material.
It was
incredibly unfortunate. This happened when we have to close the library, and individuals, they thought the CERC was never going to be coming back. So actually somebody just took a testing material. We have done everything that we can to be able to go after this particular testing kit. And unfortunately, we were not really able to be successful, okay. Even to the point of, you know, going after this person legally, and we have not been able to recuperate. So it is a testing kit.
George, trust me, I asked the same question when we had the finance committee meeting. I'm like, what? And yeah, exactly.
Because you know, it's beyond older, overdue books.
You know? Yeah, that's a lot of money for, yeah, but that's the answer. The others are predominantly what address the issue that you raised before.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I call the question. All in favor of the write down as indicated, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any abstentions? Any opposing? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you very much, Glenn.
Thank you. And that concludes my report. Thank you very much. Right.
I just want to say one thing. I wasn't at the board meeting. I did have a chance to share it with Ingrid. One of the things that I am hoping that we can both identify and have a course of action for are any of the issues in our audit report that requires an action, that we want to know what they are and that we have a plan for resolving any of those and that we have a way to monitor that. So Glenn, I'm asking that you and Ingrid work together, make sure that that display is available to us and that we have a context within our meeting and certainly within the finance committee meeting to monitor the progress in those areas and where an action on behalf of the board is necessary that we take it. One of the things that I shared with Ingrid, every audit finding is not justified. The auditor, that's their opinion. And we try to respect those opinions, but often there are institutional values, institutional opinions, or ways of seeing things that are different. And where that is the case, I just want us to be clear that we understand that there was a concern. We appreciate that we see the situation differently than the other person so that we can be satisfied that we're not neglecting or overlooking an issue. It's just that we have a different perception of it and that we might even be taking a different approach to understanding or resolving it. So that's largely what I wanted to make sure happens. My screen is blank here. I don't know what's happening, but we'll go on to the operations committee. And I don't think we have an operations committee report.
No, we don't, George. I think
thank you. All right.
To report from the
appreciating that, then we will move on to the executive director's report.
Thank you so much, George. There's a couple of items that we wanted to provide you with some information today, and they are specifically, many of them are regarding our program services. One of the things that I wanted to bring to your attention, and I have one of our colleagues is going to be sharing that with you, Michelle LeBron Griffin, it is the progress so far for the legislation the CERC has been assigned to support, which is Public Act 1912, and that concerning the inclusion of Black and Latino studies in the public school curriculum. As you all know, how we have shared with all of you, we have done this effort, even though in the midst of the pandemic, we had about 150 members of the advisory committee continue the work and very committed individuals doing the work. At CERT, we have four members of our team that are committed to this effort specifically. They are Nitza Diaz, Paquita Jarman-Smith, Michelle LeBron Griffin, and Wanda Guzman. They are leading this effort on behalf of CERC. So I had asked a member of the team to come and share with you some of our progress so far in every requests and deadline that we have met. So Michelle, I know that she is joining us right now to be able to share with you some of our progress so far and those things that we are yet to accomplish. So Jen, is she, Michelle? Okay, there she is.
She's great.
Thank you. Michelle, you are up. I already made the introduction, so if you can.
Then could I share my screen?
Sure. Jen will have to make you a host.
I think Jennifer has to give you permission to do
that. Co-host, yeah.
I don't want ever to be a host of one of these meetings.
Forget it. A completely new set of skills I have to
Really?
Mm-hmm. Okay, does everyone see that?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, super. So thank you for the introduction and the time. I won't take a lot of your meeting time. Ingrid had just asked that I give you a little bit of an overview of where we're at with the Black and Latino course of study. So as you know, the legislation was passed in June of 19 and CERC was written into that legislation. This, through our research, is the first integrated model curriculum that any state has had. In Connecticut, the any that we've had in any content area. So for instance, we don't even have a K-3 literacy curriculum in place. So this is very pioneering in regards to what we're doing. As you know, it did land as an elective full year course at the high school level. Its original intention was two separate bills, African American course of studies K-12, and then Puerto Rican Latino course of studies K-12. Those, through our democratic process, ended up with the beginning of a course at the high school level, but the vision is still that this be a full curriculum in the future. With all of that said, as we were working with our advisory group, in developing the content, there was a lot of concern in regards to implementation readiness, not only obviously of our communities, but of our staff and of our schools and our teachers who will be teaching this course. And the decision was made that a semester by semester focus would allow greater access to developing the content knowledge, as well as supporting students in their self-discovery over the course of this introduction. The desire is that across the 10 units of study, that we will have students or, you know, youth who complete the course who will be interested in pursuing ethnic studies, going on to some type of an advanced placement course, or going on to college to participate in further learning in this area. We're currently exploring a pilot implementation, which will happen actually as soon as this September, right in the midst of our hybrid COVID learning models. We have a couple of teachers who are participants on our advisory group who have been part of our curriculum development or content development committee and are so eager and excited to share that they've actually offered to participate with CERC in a field study approach so that we have some data to share when we present to the State Department and ultimately to the State Board in regards to some of our implementation recommendations. That's not solidified yet, it's just being explored, and just wanted to be certain that if that was something that you heard of, that you were aware. As you know, the legislation requires that it must be offered in 22-23, although some schools will provide it as early as this coming January in their program of studies, so that they could implement in the 21-22 school year. For that reason, we are beginning the suggestion of professional development for administrators and counselors. As soon as the curriculum is approved in December, we'll be doing that right in January in collaboration with the State Department, and then ultimately with the initial implementers in spring and summer of this coming spring and summer of the school year. And they will be supported throughout the 21-22 school year with year-long networking and coaching supports to support the evolution of the curriculum. Additional materials that are kind of on the horizon and in the vision of some of the package that we're submitting to the State Department of Education is that there will be a speakers bureau available. Again, I think several things or opportunities or blessings that have come out of our COVID experience is that we know now what virtual learning potential we have. And so we could actually have some of our historians and our scholars working with several schools across the state in providing some information or a dose of some very specific content knowledge. And that has embedded and been infused in a lot of the different lessons and activities, which I will speak about in a moment. And then also the design of the curriculum has been unit-led, but also with lesson recommendations or lesson sequence, but not actual lesson plans. So teachers will still have the autonomy with the students they have in front of them to create the actual lesson plan. And it is hoped with this group that we will be working with in this initial year of implementation 21-22 that we will be uploading to a repository or some type of a cataloging and index where future teachers who are implementing the course could see what it looked like, see what the implementation pros and cons were, successes and, you know, maybe pitfalls, and you know, so that we have a very robust curriculum moving forward. If we think about what CERC has accomplished in this short amount of time, it was only a year this June, is we have maintained regular communication with our legislators and State Department. They've been very complimentary in that regard, is that there's been seamless communication every step of the way. We've convened a 150-member advisory group, which we chuckle, Ingrid, this has never been heard of, right? So typically advisory groups are 20 to 25, 30 maybe tops, but CERC's desire to be all-inclusive with all stakeholders and having a hand, a role, a part to play. Not all of those 150 members have really done a lot of the, you know, rolling up their sleeves. Maybe about 60 have actually organized into what we call our curriculum development committees, of which we have 9 that you see here. And we're kind of in the tail end now of developing the curriculum materials, integrating the content, and talking now about dissemination and professional learning. So as you know, we have a unique website attached to our CERC site, but you could go directly to this particular site that gives you all information in regards to the legislation, including some of a recent publication that was just written by Connecticut. I think it's Connecticut by the Numbers. There was a 3-series article that talked about kind of the evolution of the legislation and its our participation and its future implementation. That was very, very well done. So please be sure to take a look at that. We conducted a high school curriculum survey, which not only looked at what our local high schools were doing, but also looked at what other states were doing in relation to Africana studies or Puerto Rican Latino studies. And so our content development committees were not starting from scratch. They actually had things to work from. We conducted 12 focus groups. One was right before COVID, I think it was March 3rd at Torrington High School. And as you know, the plan was to do them regionally, but then we did them all virtually. So we had to kind of quickly reschedule them, you know, over into the April time, but they were all conducted and we got some really great feedback from not only educators, but community members and students. There were more students who participated and some of the feedback they gave us was, it was really wonderful to hear the perspective from Bridgeport as I sit in Avon. And if we did things regionally, that type of interaction and networking couldn't or wouldn't have occurred. So we were excited about that. We've drafted the guidance document. As you know, a high school that sits in Franklin or a regional school is very different than a New Britain High School that has 3,000 or, you know, Oxford High School or Wyndham High School, right? And so we want to provide our districts and our high schools with as much guidance as possible so that the implementation of the course looks more universal and similar than it looks different. So the infrastructure support team has drafted that, and that will be part of the product that we submit with the curriculum. Again, that was not an ask, but that was a product of something that came out of focus groups. We have already delivered the artifacts of the draft learning objectives, essential questions, and course outline to the State Department and received feedback. They're very pleased with the direction. Again, continue to be very complimentary in regards to our process, in regards to where we're at, in regards to our not skipping a beat and continuing in the development of the curriculum despite our COVID restrictions. We have are in the final stages of the 10 units of study. I mentioned a semester by semester focus. There's approximately 5 units of study for Africana in semester 1 and Puerto Rican Latino studies in semester 2, with obviously introductions and conclusions and transition units in between. There's been a lot of work done to be sure that the content spirals, and right now what we're looking at is to be certain that the accuracy of that content throughout the 10 units, as well as that self-discovery for the students, you know, obviously is going from, you know, micro to macro by the end of the course, and so that this could obviously be something that districts or schools decide to include as part of their capstone project, as part of the new vision of a graduate for the course requirements for the class of 2023 and beyond. Finally, we have just invited a 10-member expert review panel together. You know, this was a part of the original vision, not for the necessity or need in any way to evaluate the curriculum, but to provide us with feedback, to refine, to enhance, to broaden and strengthen some of our resources and materials. So when you go to the website, you'll certainly see some of those, who those players are, but they are nationally renowned folks. We do have some local folks, including George, who will represent our board, that have that state perspective. Those 10 members actually have from the 24th to September 4th to review all of the units and give us their feedback. And then we will be submitting to the State Department of Education on September 30th, including a draft dissemination and professional learning plan for rollout. So the timelines as they exist today, as recent as today, is that we have these deliverables with the State Department. We have 6 advisory group meetings planned. We still have our September and November meeting on the books. All of the others were held except March was moved to May because of the COVID interruption. We had submitted the draft learning objectives, as was mentioned, and the course outline on June 5th. The units of study on July 24th. The completed course and report will be submitted, as you see in bold, on the 30th for public comment in October. We will be working with, I call it the Curriculum Instruction Assessment Committee, but the new name is the Standards and Assessment Committee. We will be meeting with them on in a workshop on November 16th so that they could ask any questions that they have. And then they will be working with us to present to the State Board on December 2nd for approval. So we're very excited that we have met all of our timelines without, you know, missing a beat. And the robust and comprehensive nature of the curriculum in regards to the feedback that's been received so far has been very complimentary. And we have gotten also feedback in regards to that communication piece and including all of the stakeholders at any juncture, from educators to higher ed, to historians, to scholars, to, again, students, parents, community members, museum people, docents, et cetera. So we're thrilled to present to you a positive experience that we've had, something that you as a board can be very proud of CERC's participation in. And certainly if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Yeah. Question regarding the deliverables and timetables. I'm just wondering if you thought about if it is useful to invite the education co-chairs and the chairs of the committees of the two committees, the African American and the Latina and Hispanic, for a briefing prior to or as a part of this group that you are offering to be introduced to it, so that they might have a...
Yes, so there will be members of the advisory group who will be invited to represent the work, as you mentioned, to that committee meeting with the State Department, as well as to participate in the presentation to the State Board. So that will not just be CERC representation, that will be representation from CERC, as well as the advisory group members.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about, would it be useful to have the education co-chairs of the legislature and the chairman of the African-American legislative office, and so that they will have the opportunity to be introduced to it, anticipating that, hey, ultimately they are going to probably have a comment or inviting their own constituencies to. So I'm just thinking about that, not to say it should be done, but to think about how do you give them the opportunity to explain to their constituencies in a way that helps move the process.
George, if I could, and Michelle, you probably can definitely add to it. Mm-hmm. One of the exciting pieces about this process and about this 150 members, actually, they are part of the advisory committee. They've been part of the whole process, George. So Senator McCrory, Representative Bobby Gibson, and Bobby Sanchez, they are actually part of the whole process. They have reviewed the draft that is on the website. They have received all the information, and you know that we received the phone calls. We received the phone calls from their concerns. So I just wanted to add a layer for you so that you are aware they have been completely involved in the process. But to your point, for them to get to see the final product, that's something that we can definitely discuss as part of the team. But I just wanted to add the layer so you know the level of involvement that they have going through the process, to the point that they, you know, they call us when they have any particular concerns directly or how to process in their constituencies as well.
Ingrid, the only thing I'd add is this does say CSDE deliverables because these timelines have been established in order for CERC to get our dollars, right? So these are the deliverables that we have to honor in regards for our accountability for those dollars. But each time we submit something, so as we submitted the learning objectives to the State Department, they also get submitted to the legislation, mm-hmm. right? So as we submitted the draft outline, they also get submitted to the legislator. So it's a dual submission, if you will. So anything you see here, you could say, you know, CSDE and, you know, participating legislators.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I guess my big concern is that the legislators' response and their appreciation is only as good as their perception or the last comment that came from their constituent around either a concern or whatever. And so it's just so important that we make sure that, one, that their egos are assuaged, that they have been given the personal and the private time to understand this was the challenge. Thank you for making it possible. This is how we approached it, so that they will not be in a position, well, they will always be in a position, and they'll probably take the prerogative to embarrass the commissioner who's going to be sitting with us at some point supporting this curriculum. We don't want to have surprises coming there because they are then responding to often a single constituent who has an issue with a minute problem or aspect that's associated with any curriculum. So to have, you know, done the work so that they are considered a part of the team. And I see you've done a lot of that with that consideration, but they do have very delicate egos that's generally driven by the last person who asked them a question. So I just want to make sure that we have their support lined up, or at least their ability to say, I have confidence in this as being a big step forward. So thank you.
Yeah, and I appreciate that comment, George, because we've experienced that several times already. So we'll leave it at that. So thank you.
Yeah. I just can't say enough about this committee. You know, I'm looking forward to the participation as expert advisory committee, but also learning a lot. And I don't know that this work And I think a part of what we need to do is position the department to know that this can't be the end of the work, that it is evolutionary. Because in my mind, if I were an instructor, just understanding the nuance between the Puerto Rican and Latina communities, they have so many political, cultural, whatever differences, that you wrap all of that into one course, it seemed to me that there's a lot of things that you're trying to pack into sausage that might not necessarily all mix. So I'm really looking forward to the participation of the expert advisory committee and the positions from practitioners around, you know, how do you really operationalize this in a way that brings, you know, valuable new support to young people who are anxious to learn in a disciplined way about themselves, their contribution to the world, and to our country. So, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Also, I would like to add, George, that for the members of the board, two of our board members are actually completely, fully embedded in the process as well, and that's Dr. Quiñones and Dr. Yancy. So they have been fully involved in the process as well. So the representation of the board and is part of this process as well. So I just wanted to mention that to the full board.
Excellent.
Thank you. And George, to your statement about the diversity and the complexity of the Puerto Rican and the Latino experience, we have had those conversations, and rest assured, the product that we put out there reflects the diversity of our communities, all the voices. It was a challenge, but nonetheless, we recognize that you gotta reflect the truth. And we walked away as we finished our lesson plans and our curriculum for Puerto Rican and Latino study history, pretty good about the fact that we truly reflected what it means to be a Puerto Rican or Latino student in the United States and where you come from, and to validate that experience. So I hope that, you know, that you will enjoy as you begin to wear the expert lens of the course, that's there. It's very clear, it's very concise, to the point, and I feel pretty proud about the work that we accomplished. It was a challenge, it was difficult, but nonetheless, we were successful in our delivery.
Great. Well, I'll certainly have more to observe as a part of the role that I'll play, but I want to congratulate you all for the work. And it just seemed like it's been so fast, and December 18th is closer than what we all feel comfortable with, but this is wonderful work. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
No problem. Thank you.
So if there's no other questions from the members of the board to Michelle, I will go ahead and move us to the next item on the updates. And this is about CERC's future location and CERC as a provider of PPE. And for that, I actually have asked our facilities manager, Van Colton, who you have not have yet the opportunity to meet, to share with you, since as part of his role, everything that has been involved on as it relates to our facilities and provider of PPE. So Van, welcome. I have already shared with the board your role, and they are waiting for your updates. So let me introduce you to all of you to our facilities manager, Van Colton. Van?
Good afternoon. Thank you, Ingrid. Good afternoon, everyone. I hope everyone is well and safe. Let's go to PPE. I know, Jen, I think you shared everything, but let's go share screen.
PPE. Let me know if you need me to do it for you, ma'am.
No, I got it, right?
Yes.
Everybody can see it?
Yes.
So, as I think everyone knows, the state reached out to CERC early June to see if we could be any assistance to the districts regarding PPE for not only summer school, but the coming school year in fall. So what we did in-house is we drafted a survey that the state sent out to all the districts to see what the pulse was, what their needs, quantity, things of that nature. That survey stayed open for about three weeks. Once we tallied all the survey results, we sent an email blast to all districts regarding an order form for their PPE needs. Out of those 150s that were surveyed, 74 districts and or schools responded with orders to be priced, and then we needed to get authorization, a purchase order provided, and a check for the 50% deposit. Those were all the preliminaries. 30 of those districts responded, and as you can see, the breakdown is below. And I think as of right now, there are maybe two or three districts that are reordering. They anticipate a few more needs. So, but as of the last week and a half, everything has slowed down. But I got to tell you, from the last week in June to last week, it was a little overwhelming, to say the least, but all good. I've touched base with school nurses, superintendents, facility managers, custodians, and they are so grateful for CERC and the effort. They're very appreciative. And to date, everything has been shipped and delivered with the exception of the latex gloves. There are no gloves anywhere in the country as of this moment, but our vendor has guaranteed us. They're waiting on a couple of cargo shipments, but by the end of next week, everyone should have their gloves. So some schools are opening up right after Labor Day. Some are pushed back. I talked to New Haven District today. They're going back maybe in 8 more weeks. Again, so is Danbury. So everyone is in a good place that has reached out to CERC for help. And again, you can see the highlighted areas here of where we are with the total, probably with the other two or three, almost close to 700,000 that we were able to assist the school districts with their PPEs for the coming school year. And now, what I mean,
you mentioned, I'm sorry. Yeah, thanks. First of all, is this the effort because CERC can buy them in bulk cheaper, or CERC can organize the effort in a way that allows it to get done without having to have, you know, 169 independent efforts? What justified CERC's participation? And what I don't see here on the screen, and it just concerns me, is I don't see Hartford, New Haven, Bridgeport, the districts that I become very, very concerned about and who I would love to see there. And it's just that for some reason they're not on the list, or
George. So let me jump in, and Van, this is Charlene. Very, very nice to meet you. And so, George, I can jump in and provide the background, as maybe I was the one who got on the phone and called Ingrid initially and asked her to do this. We were getting a lot of phone calls from districts based on the numbers that they wanted to order, that in some cases they didn't need, if they weren't ordered enough in bulk ordering to probably get the best rate.
Right.
You know, and so the concept was districts started asking us, can we get some support around ordering? And frankly, the commissioner reached out to the RESC first, because they were involved in doing some things, and we got a no, and we turned to CERC, who gladly, happily said yes. And as Van mentioned, we had a process. So it wasn't a requirement. And so in some cases, I think districts were working much closer with their municipality and probably got some orders that way, others were kind of on their own. So it was clearly voluntary for the districts to decide. So the fact that folks are not here doesn't necessarily mean they don't have what they need. They probably found some other way of purchasing it versus using the CERC opportunity for those bulk orders to be done for them.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you so much. That is, you hit it right on the head. We were asked to help if they needed it. We did send the survey out to all districts. And as was mentioned, you know, the 74 that responded, even half of them must have, you know, some of them have their vendors that they deal with all during the school year. The custodian staff, the nurse staff, they all work with them. They did reach out. They thought some of our pricing was very comparable. And and the response time was excellent. It's just that I think these were the districts that really needed the most assistance. So we helped them out. But yes, there are many districts, even, you know, like Greenwich or Fairfield, Norwalk. Some responded, Easton. But, you know, then they either were shopping around, which is, you know, they're doing their due diligence, which is, you know, what they should do. And that's where we ended up as of right now.
Great. That's a wonderful service. Great.
Yeah, I mean,
one more backdrop to that is that, you know, the resources that were just provided by the state to districts, one of the things that districts on a survey were able to say was to put a request in terms of what things were going to cost them, and they got 100% of what they requested that they needed to pay for PPE. So whether they ordered through CERC or not, paying for these should not be an issue for them, because they actually receive state dollars. It's actually coronavirus funding to support PPEs.
And just thank you, Charlene. And just to reiterate to the members of the board, CERC is not generating any revenue. This is a service.
Right.
It's a service, and the way we see it is a marketing service for CERC. You know, we're providing the service as the call came in. So I just want to make sure that it's clear that we are not receiving a revenue out of this service.
Well, this is so important because, you know, PPE is going to be essential for, you know, in-person instruction. And mm-hmm. it is so often in our largest urban districts where they have so much problems coordinating access to essential things, you know, who don't have pencils and who don't have paper, you know, that they not have this and that we have reached out to them to help fill any voids that they might have. It's just a really, really good thing. And I just hope that they do have other sources to get it, or that they might choose at a different date to access this. But to know that there is an option for them is very laudatory. So thank you.
And George, one thing to add also, that we made sure we sent out the link several times, because as you send it out once, people miss it. And opportunities that we have to speak to even legislators as they ask about this, to share the role that CERC was playing. So we've talked to legislators about it. We've talked to board members. We've talked to other groups, including our superintendents, multiple times, and send a lot of people to CERC for the service.
Yeah, and just to add to what Charlene just mentioned, I have personally received phone calls from legislators asking about the service and how they connect the school districts to us. So they know, and thank you, Charlene, for that, the advocacy and mention and CERC, because we receive the phone calls from legislators directly about the service and how their school districts can actually take advantage of the service.
Yes, and that's, and you know, and I'm... one from the old school where I picked up the phone originally and I talked to almost every district. I just wanted to introduce myself and put a name, you know, and a voice to the name. They were, again, very appreciative. We had a lot of conversations, and we let them know that when the school year and whatever they think they might need, don't hesitate to reach out. Ingrid has emphasized that, you know, we are here to service these schools in any way we can. So I was grateful for the opportunity. I learned a lot, let me tell you, in the last 7.5 weeks. but I feel pretty good that everyone that responded and ordered has what they need. So let's hope that the school year goes safe and healthy, and hopefully we don't need any more PPEs soon.
Thank you.
May I ask you just one question?
If I could add something? Go ahead, George.
Ask one question. Did you have the opportunity to examine the product yourself, or have you taken that opportunity?
I not only did I have the opportunity to touch and feel and look at it, but a couple of the vendors that we dealt with were local enough where they would bring samples. Excellent. They would send snapshots. So we had a great working relationship with the districts that required or wanted a little more, you know, hands-on type of approach.
Great, thanks.
What I was going to say, that I don't know if you had an opportunity to watch yesterday in the morning, there was a press conference by the major teacher union leadership participated, and one of their 13 tenants speak mm-hmm. about the use of PPE and the ability of the districts to provide that so that teachers and students and staff are safe. So I think that, you know, it could have not come at a better time, Ingrid, for CERC to be the provider of the service to districts, because part of the discourse is around having the ability to be able to secure what they need for their teachers so they could be safe. So kudos to you for, you know, the leadership and the thought that went into, and to Charlene, that went into, you know, say you could provide that service. It's critical and it's key. And I think that, you know, maybe another round of touching base with districts, because this is very real. The teacher unions are very real, and they are not going to go away in terms of wanting to have districts deliver on their needs.
Thank you so much, Agnes. Thank you. I have to definitely be grateful to the team, Ben, Glenn, Greg. They all, in the finance team, they all came together and developed the process. And thank you, Charlene, for the advocacy in the service. We still receive an emails as of now of districts saying, you know, can you provide us with this service? And here we are to be of service. Yeah. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
I'm being conscious of the time. I know the meeting is up at 2:00 and I just have a couple of more updates. So George, you just let me know what you would like to do. I just want to make sure that I'm respectful of your time.
We'll just move through with yours.
Excited to be up going up with Owen.
Okay. There we go.
Okay, if you could go through, I think the return to the office is very important. So we can get that and the salary and the staffing updates, I think, because that talks to our capacity as we move forward. So thank you.
Okay. Ben, I'm going to go ahead and do the return to the office. If the time allows, we will come back to the location. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
I just wanted to bring you all up to speed regarding, I have mentioned a couple of meetings ago that we have developed an internal task force to be able to review CERC's ability to go back into the office. One of the things that we have never done, we have not stopped the operation. We continue to provide the service, as you can see. So currently we are, every single member of the agency, it is in a teleworking. We have used the teleworking as one of our executive orders, if I can put it that way. Everybody went in teleworking, affected March. And we continue to operate. We do have a presence in the agency. Some of us go to the agency almost on a weekly basis. They're individuals. I go to the office when necessary, when I have to send checks, finance, fiscal. And we are being very, very cautious about how we manage the office environment through all this. One of the things under the guidance of the governor, our building needs to be certified in order for CERC to be able to go back, and this is part of the DAS guidelines. Our building is not yet certified because we do provide service to the public. Therefore, the building needs to be certified. So we are continuing to operate on the teleworking. As teleworking, all of our professional development continue to be virtual. We are not doing any in-person training. And the other layer that we have had conversations with the task force is the concerns that have now evolved as a result of the different approaches the school districts are taking in order to provide the schooling to students. So we have some school districts that are going hybrid, virtual, part-time. Therefore, our staff is going to be greatly impacted by all this as well. So right now, what I have, I'm continuing to offer to you as members of the board, the CERC will continue to do this teleworking.
we had established, we have a strong platform. There is no need for us to put ourselves at risk, the participants at risk, and we continue to do the service. One of the things, I know there were some concerns about maybe communication, because of our current platforms, every member of the staff, when the phone rings in the office, go directly to their computers. So we are not missing the beat. So we have established a strong technological base to be able to continue to operate this way. I know that the governor is looking into, begin to stop some of the executive orders that they have to be in effect into September 9. We have received the communication ourselves saying what will be the impact if some of these executive orders are expire, and we have shared our concerns with them directly. Our biggest concern right now is the health and safety of our staff and those our customers as well. So I just wanted to share with all of you that the office is open, is active, but we will continue to operate in a teleworking manner, which I have created a lot of different benefits for us as well as you begin to look at this. But we know that at some point we're going to be request might come for in-person training, but we are following the governor's executive orders right now. So I just wanted to share that with all of you at this point.
What's the process for the building being certified?
That is something, and I will have Van and Michelle touch base about this. They have to follow some guidelines and have meetings with the Department of Administrative Services. And for the last communication that I received from them is that they need to come and do an inspection to make sure that the building is on there with the standards.
Like a health inspection where they come by.
So that's exactly correct. Yeah, that's correct, Ingrid. So I'm working closely along with Michelle with Tom Fish from the DAS. Landlords received an official email from DAS stating that, you know, there are state tenants in there that they need to self-certify. And it's as simple as posting signs, hand sanitizers, showing that they're cleaning the common areas more frequently and that they're, you know, and they have directionals. So the landlord did contact me and they are in the process of doing that. DAS will monitor that. And then when DAS releases me to maybe stay on top of them a little more, they will. But the first go around is DAS notifies the landlord, they comply, they self-certify, and then we're notified.
Right.
Thank you. And the last item that I wanted to provide you with some updates, I'm going to ask our HR manager, Crystal, to provide you, and that's specifically about staffing. And you will hear here a couple of positions that we are open, specifically about the conversation that we had earlier regarding support to English learners. Crystal?
Yes, thank you, Ingrid. Erin, welcome. I'm Crystal Hewitt, the HR manager for CERC. First and foremost, I just wanted to go ahead and go through everything for everyone. So right now, we're at 38 employees. That does include one of our newly hired consultants. She just started with us on August 17th, 2020. So we are still doing recruitment and continuing to get our job done. We also have another consultant that is starting. Her start date is currently pending. In addition to that, we do have two active and open positions. One of them is the English language learner consultant. Right now we have, there's a total of 110 applicants in that requisition, which we will be simultaneously recruiting for that while we are working on our associate director role so that we can get Ingrid some support as well. For our associate director role, we had a total of 76 applicants, and those interviews will resume as early as September 9th so that we can go ahead and hire an associate director so that we can continue our great efforts. As Ingrid mentioned earlier today, we are exploring the need for some additional support that would be in the form of additional consultants. So we're looking at our racial equity work, we're looking at social emotional consultants and so forth, so that we can be able to support the school districts, being that we've been receiving so many different contracts and so many different requests. We need to definitely keep up with the demand. So
thank you so much. Thank you, Crystal. Thank you. Any questions for Crystal?
no questions. I just want to make a comment. I just think I'm so pleased at the priority to and the pool. I guess I'm just ecstatic about the pool, whereby there are sufficient numbers of people who are available that allows us to go in and really create a standard for getting the right people who are prepared to do this work. And I can't say enough about my support for wanting to find additional support for Ingrid at the director level. The work has really, really expanded. And when we think about all of the dimensions of our operation that needs high quality supervision, I think that Ingrid, that is great. And so Crystal, thank you very much. It seems as if you've been very busy.
Yes, I have, while trying to keep two little ones.
Oh my goodness. So thank you.
Thank you, thank you. So George, that concludes my report and updates for the members of the board. I don't know if you have any questions for me.
I don't have questions for you. If the board members do, then we'll certainly entertain those. Otherwise, I'm going to switch down to my own. And largely, it's not so much as a report, but things that I am concerned that I've been sharing with Ingrid that I think that we really need to be prepared. First of all, I want to make sure that PPE is a priority for our staff when they are here and when they're on the road. So to the extent that people are comfortable that, hey, if you forgot a mask, there are masks here that you can have and that we have them for our guests when they come, that you all, I'm sure, are considering that. I was talking to Ingrid. We didn't have a chance to talk about the Waterbury facility and what might be the situation there, but that process is still going on. DAS has been in touch with us again to make sure that even in spite of COVID, we are anticipating the move and still prepared to make the move. They're continuing to do those things that they have to do, engaging with the landlord in order to make sure that those things are ready for us at some I'm hoping time soon that we can begin. We know that we're reserving the space in our budget for that expense when it becomes necessary. So that's important. I just wanted to share two things related to aspects of our work. On the curriculum side, to me, it is very important for our curriculum to be one that supports the multiple points of view that might be available around some of our issues. And for that, I've encouraged, to the extent that we can get authentic voices, and this is a part of what we talked about in terms of developing our virtual capacity or our electronic capacity, so that where there are issues that, where there are many, many points of view, many ways to perceive cultures, that we have documents that come from the people in the cultures themselves, people who have studied the events, that teachers can call on to actually support their work in an authentic way. So that's something that when we think about what else can we offer the department, to the extent that they can realize the need to continue an investment, that we can be proactive in helping them think about how to help this situation grow. The other thing that I was concerned about in terms of our work with the department, and particularly the issue around institutional racism, and I shared with Ingrid, we don't have to be the only ones who out there who are doing this. I do think that there is a need to convene and maybe provide some sense of a trainer of the trainer support to those other institutions who might be serving schools, so that to the extent that we have a thorough understanding of what the menu of things that schools need, that there are shared resources that these various institutions can access in the service of schools. I think that's very important because I don't, as busy as we are, I think that the need is going to outstrip our own capacity to address all of the concerns that school districts have. But I do think that at some point we need to think about what is the learning that we need to, or that those who are doing the work need to have. Do they need a support system themselves so that we can, so that our state won't suffer because people didn't have the knowledge or didn't have access to others to help them with the knowledge. So I've asked Ingrid to think about a role that we can play in that regard. But it just seems like this whole year is going so fast. And I just want to, in the end, thank all of you for hanging in there, for being flexible, for giving our staff the support that they need to continue to do the great work. I am so encouraged by what's happening at the State Department of Education in terms of the moves or the proposals that the commissioner has made and those things that we can do to help him and our superintendents be successful. I just want us to feel that we're all a part of a family that has that as a common goal. So with that, I think that is all that I have to say. I'm going to assume, do we have a foundation report? I know that, was there anything from the foundation that we needed to hear?
I can just share that we will be having our first foundation meeting on September 15th for this fiscal year.
Okay.
And then, the group will convene at that point and the agenda will be sent out about a week prior.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Is there any, we are now a little bit over, are there any other agenda items that we need to entertain? Hearing none, I will take, accept a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Thank you very much, Erin. It's been a pleasure having you, as it is always a pleasure seeing and hear from all the board people. So in the meantime, and until we meet again, be safe and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Okay, I gotta leave, right?
Okay. Did you want to stay on? Stay on with Ingrid. I'm gonna have everybody exit out, and I'm gonna make Ingrid the host, and then I will leave.
Okay. Okay.